Hello and welcome to Bluebells Forever, a podcast with interviews of Bluebell dancers past and present. Join Sherry Lewis, a Bluebell herself, as she leads us on a journey through story and experience. And now here's Sherry.
Thank you for listening to Bluebells Forever podcast. We truly appreciate you listening to this. And we'd love that it is a worldwide community of people that were in the shows, people that are curious about the shows. And it matters to those of us in the show that we preserve this well. And so hearing these stories from the people who lived it is very important than just someone giving a history lesson. So besides the podcast, there is a book that is out on Amazon, which I have taken 84 of the interviews and condensed them down and then included incredibly beautiful photos of these performers in their glory days, as well as set designer and costume designers, wardrobe, singers. There's great stories in this book as well as here in the recording. But if you'd like it as a permanent keepsake on your coffee table, and this book is almost as big as a coffee table, it's huge, and it's because of all the beautiful photos. So that is on Amazon.com, and there's a digital version and a print version. So you could look out for that if you'd like to have yours as a keepsake. And also, if you'd like to help the podcast out, it really helps if we get review and rated and then share it with friends. We just want more people to know about us and to have this history live on even after we're long gone. So if you wouldn't mind doing a review on iTunes or Spotify, it would be truly appreciated. And now enjoy this next interview. Ooh. So we are on interview 3 for Follies coming to Vegas. And I want to thank Tom for setting this up because we started with him and David of what the vision is and how this came to be. And then I got to do an interview, which will come out a few weeks before yours. So it's so great to get, I want to say the individual, we'll hear individual stories, but collective, because there's a lot of things I want to ask of what it's like even to come back on the stage and be with each other. But before we get there, I would love to just have you introduce yourself. And how about we just say, like, how you started with dance and what that looked like. Because I know we've got some tappers. I saw names like Gregory Hines and some other fun things on that bio for a few of you. So yeah, just what your dance career was like. And then we won't really get into what's happening now. We'll kind of do that collectively. But just individually, you know, how you came to be in this and representing the showgirl in Vegas and okay. Follies.
Okay, I can start.
Sherry
and I, you know, we started dance when we were 3. So being twins, mom just threw us into the dance studio to take care of somebody else to take care of us, you know. And so we danced forever and until we went 16, and then we started dancing professionally at 16 in Texas. We're from Texas. And then I had my own dancers when I was 19 in a little club in Texas. And then I went to visit Vegas one weekend when the International opened in 1969 with Barbra Streisand. And I saw shows there and I went, how do I get there? So, and I didn't know how to audition or anything. So I went to then I got a job at Disneyland working there. And during Disneyland, I saw an audition to go to Puerto Rico, really. So I auditioned for Tibor Rudas, who was the acrobat. He was the, if you know Tibor Rudas, he was hiring for the Tropicana Hotel and in Puerto Rico. When I auditioned, he said, I don't need you in Puerto Rico, but you can certainly go audition with Vasily Sulik in Las Vegas. And he's, you know, if you know Vasily, he started the Nevada Dance Company. You know, ballet company, you know, which Lori Thompson knows as well. And I got the job immediately. And that's my first job was in 1970 at the Folies Bergère. Never saw the show or anything. And it was just amazing when I saw the show. And it's back then you rehearsed for 2 weeks. We did, you know, you couldn't work with the music because of the musicians union. So you had a flat, you had to go watch the show to listen to the music. So we rehearsed
in the light booth.
In the light booth. So you had to rehearse. You rehearsed everything for 2 weeks. And then the night before you open, you rehearsed with the full orchestra and letting you know that we never even put on costumes then either or headpieces.
No.
So it was just really how they threw you in the show. And so we got through that opening night and everything was fine. And just want to tell you, never wore a G-string before. And they go, well, you have a G-string. And I went, No, so all the showgirls, well, everybody came running in and gave it, throwing G strings at me. This is what you wear. This is what you wear. This is opening night, and so opening night, all of a sudden they put on this headpiece, and I went, oh my God, I have a 30-pound headpiece on, and I'm supposed to dance and run up and down the stairs and up and down the stairs and cross the stage and everything. If you've seen the old Foley's at Bergère showroom, it was just like stairs, 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 going up and down. You had to crawl downstairs to get on the stage. You couldn't just walk onto the
It was
stage.
too tall.
It
It
was
was
too
too
tall. So
tall.
the stage crew had to halt, had to physically take you down the stairs, like a little rack on the side, staircase, and get you on the stage. And if you came on from the on the side of the stage, you had to go through the kitchen to come up on the stage to get onto the ramps to get on the stage. It was amazing. Well, about 2 nights, I danced holding my hat. Because I couldn't, my headpiece was so heavy, as you know, as a dancer. Yeah, really, it was 30 pounds, and you when you're supposed to run and you tilt your head forward, your whole body's got to go. So it took me about 2 or 3 nights. That after I got used to it, then it was a piece of cake. And back then, and all the costumes were from Paris, France. This is the French Riviera before Jerry Jackson took over. And you had 13 pairs of shoes, so you had to make sure that the shoes fit you, otherwise you couldn't get the
Yeah,
job.
that's how I got the job.
And
Do you
so
fit in the shoes?
they went to Terry and said to stop her right now. Now, Terry, we really like you, but if you have a twin, it'd be great. Bring her here. And Terry says, well, I do.
Oh
And Maynard Sloat went, well, bring her over. And so I came in and had to audition for Vasily. And the first thing he said is that we have Can-Can in the show. I hadn't seen the show. Can you do a jump split? And I went, okay, I don't know what a jump split is. I figured jump split, right? Well, I did it, couldn't walk for a couple of days after that. But other than that, I got the job, but I had to wait until the first opening. But the same thing with Terry, the costume. I mean, with the Musicians Union, you didn't even know the music or anything. You did it with counts. And you had one day of rehearsal with the full cast and the orchestra, and heaven forbid you make a mistake, because they will get mad at you because you have to stop. So we had to
Oh, because a live orchestra.
really, it was a lot of pressure on you. And I did the same thing with her, holding the hat. I couldn't dance either the first night either.
I know, as I was on the stage across the stage from Sherry, and I looked across, and there she is holding her hat. And I went, been there, done it. And we all do it, but it was so funny. But then we were there for about 2 or 3 years, and then we came back and we worked another 13 years there in the Follies,
At the Follies. Oh my, I saw the picture. There's one of you profile on Straight On. That's amazing. So I don't know if we got to your names. Can you say your names and who is speaking first, just so whoever's listening?
Terry Thorndike was first, and
Okay.
then Sherry interrupted.
No, it was good. Well,
So that's how we
how was
started
that?
in Vegas. And did
And
many
not even knowing
shows.
what the shows were, because that's like I ask a lot of people how they even knew, because if you're a tall dancer, you don't know there's options. And then a lot of it, I just went to audition and then saw the show, like, oh, wow, this is what I'm going to wear. This is what I'm going to do. And it's kind of a quick, but I'm also like, I've heard people talk about like a Jubilee, like when I replaced someone. So you learn the choreography, you maybe put the costume on once, and then you've got the stairs. I just like, it feels ridiculous to me now. And yours is even more stressful to think
Oh,
that you
yeah,
didn't
it's
even get
crazy.
to do the stairs with an orchestra. Like those are a lot of things at once. So just the stairs and jazz clothes and dance clothes is enough, but you start adding all that weight on your head and you can't look down and you're in high heels. Anyone who
Can't.
listens as a dancer knows the stair situation, like
Oh,
that's our
absolutely.
life. I've heard the stories of people falling down, up and down stairs. Like there's so many ways that you could hurt yourself, and you just at a young age go, yeah, sure, we'll do that.
And you do. And we were like only 22 years old, so we didn't say no to anything. We just kind of did it.
Got up and
I
do
don't.
it.
And I mean, we at the first 2 days of rehearsals, I did nothing but run up and down the stairs, across the stage, and then the next morning the phone rang, and I got out of the bed, and I completely collapsed because my whole legs cramped from running, because you weren't in shape for running. It was just like I had to crawl, and just then you had to learn to stretch. Back then, they really didn't have anybody to help you stretch or tell you what to do, how to prepare. It was like we just jumped into it, but nowadays it's totally different to avoid any type of injuries and stuff. Back then, we just did it. And Sherry and I were 5 foot 6. The reason why they hired us, because we had acrobats in the show that was short. So they were kind of like a medium size. We had like the 5'2 Tibor Rudis acrobats in the show. And then they had our line of dancers, the dress dancers. And then you had your beautiful showgirls and everything, and your principals and everything different. So that's why we were a little bit shorter. We were able to work in the Folly show. And they kept that tradition on through when Jerry Jackson took over in 1975, you know, because he used the acrobats and then gymnasts in the show. You know, so it kind of kept a lot of us working because of that requirement.
Yeah.
But we did work at Casino de Paris show with Frederick Gabpar for three of his shows too in town. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Casino de Paris and Bear Touch of Vegas. We did a lot of little shows around town. We worked solid for almost 25 years, you know. And back then they had a show, production show in each main hotel and a lounge show. So it allowed a lot of us to keep dancing all the time. If you went from one show, something was available, you jumped into the other show. It really kept us going and working until almost the middle of the 80s. And that's when everything changed. But it was really exciting back then. Everybody, you know, worked. Everybody knew one another. It was really, really a fun time.
Yeah, a small community.
It's a very small community. And I don't know if you remember back then, whenever a star came into Las Vegas, they always did a 2 a.m. show free for all the entertainers in town.
Yeah.
That was the most exciting thing. We couldn't wait. Tom Jones, Inga Burt, Diana Ross, B.B. King, Liza Minnelli. Everything was free. It's free. And they did a 2 a.m. show for everybody. That's how we all kept together.
Even within the shows, there's that camaraderie because there's one show and Jubilee was the last one. But it felt I went to Hello Hollywood in Reno, but when I was there, the option to see a show in every big casino. And if one thing is closing your contract, you just knew you could not have to, you could stay in Vegas and work as long as you wanted. Where dancers now have no idea what that's like. It's like, if you can get on a cruise ship, good luck.
You know, I would go see Juliet Prowse at the Desert Inn, and he would say, I'm from the Folies Bergère. Oh, come right on in. No charge.
Yeah.
And they would come in and sit you at the best table. And if you wanted to go backstage to talk to her, you could. You know, you can't do that now.
No,
you know?
Oh my gosh.
And now that's gone. But it was just a beautiful time back then, you know, that we all miss. And everybody got dressed, too. You know, you couldn't go out in blue jeans.
Yeah.
We had to wear a dress in the casino, a cocktail dress. And if you didn't, you had to just go home, go back way. But it was really, really exciting when the curtain would open and everybody was in jackets, cocktail clothes, everything. It was just
having dinner and smoking.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that smoke in the casino.
And you wear your eyelashes after work.
It was a really, really
not
exciting.
Like now, everybody wears eyelashes.
Yeah. They do. And nobody dresses. Everybody wears the flip flops.
I was telling you, I'm going to see this show when I'm there in April, and I have a dress. A friend of mine gave me all these like gowns that I thought I'd never wear. I'm like, I'm so excited. I get to dress up.
Yes.
I'm going on the 12th.
Yeah, dress up. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I'm so excited to dress up. I hope I can wear my shoes. I was telling you before, which we're going to get to heels pretty soon.
Yeah.
That I put heels on and it used to be so easy. And now the hardest thing is getting the buckle to get my fingers and to reach my ankles with my hip hurting. And I'm like,
buckle mine the other day.
I had Sherry buckle my shoes the other day. I can't reach down and twist myself to buckle my shoes. So
that's the thing is ankle. Yeah. It's not fun. Wow. Okay. We're going to get to the heels part. Sherry, I want to ask because it's like, I've heard the story, like a lot of times an older sister and then the younger one comes in and they kind of show them the ropes, but you're twins, but you still didn't come in at the same time. Sherry, what was Terry kind of helping you or just like your figure on your own? She's already been in the show. She knows the cast. She knows how things work.
Right. She had helped me with makeup and stuff because I've always had the long hair. So now I had to learn how to put my hair up to put the headdress on. So that was hard. Of course, and like that, I never had a G-string on either, so I had to wear that too. So it was interesting. It was fun.
I'm thinking how many people wear like thongs or the word thong still doesn't feel right to me. I think you wear those on your feet. G-strings for your butt.
Yeah, right. G-strings more like it.
No. But they wear it as underwear, so it's no big deal. But back then, that was like, where's the rest of the fabric? Because we had never seen that. It wasn't like a choice for underneath your clothing. It was like, I'm missing most of the things I need here. Can I ask of their age? Because I think that this is if it's okay to ask. Never ask a lady your age unless she's in Follies and it's a big deal that the age makes it even more amazing.
No, both Sherry and I are 76. We just turned 76 in October. Mm-hmm. So
the audience can't see you. I can see you.
I was going to guess barely 50.
They're all amazing.
But it is interesting. I think that we talk about aging, like in a lot of these, like when I went to the Bluebell reunion in Paris, and everybody, because everybody's dressed up, but their posture looked incredible, which makes you look younger of how you hold yourself. But everybody just looked so glamorous, like that stayed all these years, and the youthfulness, maybe what we got to do. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, I'm always stunned when I get on here and I'm thinking I know how old somebody is. I'm like, that can't be right. That's not right.
In fact, Madame Bluebell helped me get my job in Paris when I went to Paris.
Really?
Yeah, because I worked at the Moulin Rouge in the early 70s, and I knew I was going to Paris, and I went to meet Madame Bluebell at the Stardust, and just to let her know that I was going to Paris. And she says, well, when you get there, you have to call such and such, my brother, my son-in-law, I think his name is Patrick Lipovici.
Yeah.
So they were there. And so I went there and to the Lido, because they were going to try to get me in, but I was a little small for the Lido. But then they put me into the Moulin Rouge, because the Moulin Rouge and the Lido were the same company at that time. They were all it was the same people running it and everything. So she really helped me get my job there and everything. What a nice lady she was.
Yeah, you know, oh my gosh.
The audition was quite unusual, because, you know, usually with auditions, they give you a combination, correct?
Yeah.
And so when I got up on stage, and all the Bluebell girls were sitting in the audience, every one of them, you know, and I'm 22, 23 years old then. And she goes, okay, now I want you to dance. And I, you know, every dance step that went through my head, I completely blanked. I just could not, you know, so I did nothing but kick layouts and head rolls. I had no idea what to do, you know, but it was the strangest feeling when they say, just dance. You know, so I did anyway, and got the job, you know, but it was quite interesting to how they, you know, did the audition.
I've heard, because I auditioned for it, but it was a big cattle call in Vegas. There's like 300, and it was, somebody taught us the choreography. I had never heard until I've done the interview that how many people were just like, do something. Like, what do you want? Like, just do something. Don't, you know, to me, do the jerk, the twist, or do you actually want to see some technique?
You know, that's exactly what I was doing. I was doing everything I could think of, you know, and so it was just like, I felt like an idiot, but I just kept on moving, you know, and then she said, fine, everything was fine. And then they got me the job, you know, which was fun, you know, it was quite an interesting job. It was real 7 nights a week too, you know, in Paris, you know.
I know I could do an hour just on you guys. I have so many questions. I just want to do one more because I want to get to the rest of you. But also, like, I've heard that the
Follies on each of us.
Yeah, I know. It's like we need a separate one. But I know that the Follies was known for their can-can. I don't know, even back then, right? That it was very athletic, very acrobatic.
Very good, then that
show was also kind of the first of the showgirls style, like the Follies before Miss Bluebell comes in with the showgirls. There was the Tropicana was known, the Follies Bergère for their can-can, their showgirls, and then it was a very hard,
award-winning.
I think, like,
award-winning, Terry Jackson's award-winning can-can.
Absolutely, it was beautiful, the can-can. With all the acrobats and gymnasts they used, they were just fantastic. Yeah.
Which my husband, that's how I met my husband. He was an acrobat in Follies Bergère, and that's how we met. I was a dancer in another show. Terry Ritter.
Yeah, let's come to Terry, because we'll get some more things. We'll kind of overlap stories, but because I think it's like just a known.
But I think that's a good plug for the acrobats, you know, the Follies Bergère. It was an amazing show.
It was a great can-can.
Well, I've seen videos, and it's sad because, like, nobody had their phones back then, so it's hard to find some footage. But I've seen some stuff maybe back to the 70s. Oh, yeah. So maybe it was when you were in it, of just how hard dancing they were, like, especially the can-can. I was like, because I have a can-can and I have a Parisian cabaret, and I had them watch that one. I go, see, they're going to really watch a can-can, Moulin Rouge and the Follies Bergère, if you want to see the real deal. And they were dying. I'm like, you think yours is hard? Watch what these ladies were doing every night, two shows a night. I think that's hard for people, dancers. I'm sorry. Yeah. I think it's Amazon. It happens every time I do an interview, the dog goes crazy. So Terry, can you share a little bit, like, how you got dancing and a little bit of your dance career?
Well, I moved here my senior year in high school. I'm an Army brat, and I'd never seen a dance before. I did not start dancing at three, like a lot of people, but I went to see a ballet, the Nevada Ballet. And I had never seen a ballet before. And I went and met them afterwards, and they were so stately and so beautiful. And I go, that's what I want to do. At like 18, I decided I was going to be a dancer. So, wow. Yeah, I had never danced, but I'm in the right spot in Las Vegas. And I took a million dance classes. And 3 years later, I got a job at Rocky Sinis Wild World of Burlesque.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Yeah, I went to my first audition, which I got yelled at because the choreographer saying, you never come to an audition without your fishnets and your eyelashes. And I go, well, what are they? I don't even know. And your shoes. I don't even know what I had on shoes-wise. And but the producer, Rocky Sinis, loved me. So he goes, I like that girl. I want her in my show. He was a mob guy, you know, but I didn't get the job. But they kept me. I got called back like a month later, and because Rocky Sinis wanted me in the show. Good. So I kind of learned how to dance on the spot. And I kept taking dance classes, but I got better and better. And I worked in that show off and on for 20 years. So
really,
it was a great, and I met my husband who was an acrobat in the Follies Bergère while I was there too.
Wow.
So all
I have a question about
our husband.
You're
were
what?
In the Follies Bergère.
Really?
All
oh
three of them. Jerry, Perry. Yeah.
Because we talk about like how we kind of live that vampire life. So you're really only going to meet entertainers or bartenders in Vegas if you're working so late, because we go to bed when everybody's getting up. I want to ask, like, if you did that show for so long, how often were they changing the show over back then? Because I feel like, you know, like Jubilee ran for 35, Hello Holly was 11. I don't know if the Tropicana, what their turnover, like a brand new show, or do they change a few numbers, or do they keep it the same that whole time you were there?
Yeah, well, at the Trop, when we first got there, they changed it earlier, every 3 years.
Yeah,
and that was all that, and then once Jerry Jackson got a hold of it, it went a little bit longer and longer because there was not enough money, and it was stupid to destroy all the costumes. They
right.
said they would burn them and take. They didn't do that. Somebody else got the costumes and sets. But yeah, it went a little bit longer now. I mean, even the Can-Can went on for how many years? 30 years?
Since, yeah, it started in 75, so it went till it closed.
Yeah. So
really?
Jerry was redoing, he would redo the Can-Can a little bit, but keep the main body of it. So, or he would change the costumes a little bit, but they kept a lot of things. And then they would take some numbers out, put new ones in. So now it's a brand new show because they added one number. So that's how they did it. Save money.
Yeah.
Have you seen Karen Fetter's book on the Follies?
Ran a long time too.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Oh, the Karen Fetter has a show on the Follies, Bergère, and the costumes. Because I didn't even pay attention even when I was in the shows. And now I'm finding all these books and all this history. And I'm like, I wish I had paid attention back then, but I'm so glad that people are writing books and there's photos and like the podcast is to keep our stories preserved because I think a lot of us left it
and went. And my artwork.
Well, I wanted to ask you about
documented.
Yeah, I want to ask about your artwork because
last 5 years before the show closed, I worked for Jerry Jackson, and Jerry and I did too in another Jerry Jackson production at the Sahara called Pinups at the Movies. So that's where I met Jerry. And I've always done artwork. And when I was working in my show at the Holiday Casino, which we changed the shows, we went to the Holiday Casino, we went to Wild World Burlesque, Roaring Twenties, and Keep Smiling America. But I would paint backstage the whole time I was in those shows. So, and when I retired, I went to Jerry and I said, I'd like to paint the Follies Bergère. And he says, sure. He gave me carte blanche to come in the last 5 years of the show. I go in all the time, every night sometimes, and paint the shirt, the girls. And that's what I've been doing. But I've always been an artist. before I was a dancer. So I was told I was so good when I was like 9 years old, and I got an A+ on a little Hummel card that I did or something from my teacher. And I go, I'm really good at that. That's what I'm going to do. And then when I saw dancing, I go, I love that. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to do it. So I combined the two of them, and I've been. And what was the question?
Oh, it was asking about your art, because I think at the angle, I can't quite see it, but it's like the feathers, because what I think is interesting is it looks like there's movement.
Oh, yes.
Because there's like a showgirl holding still is one thing, but to capture movement, I've seen a few people do it well, because like there is something that captures the feathers moving, or we stood still for a couple seconds, but I want to see this up close. Do you have your art somewhere people can see it?
I have
like a website, or do you
pictures. Okay. I have a website. Yes. TerryRitterArt.com.
Okay. I'm going to check it out. And I would love other people, because
I have tons of everything.
And so, you have a painting at the airport. Yeah. Did I hear that right?
Yes. I did a 50-foot mural called Follies in Flight. It's like the yellow one, the yellow boas.
What you're saying.
And
yeah.
These girls were my models too. And it's three-dimensional, which they are in it. And I had, it's in the new McCarran International section. I had 4 years to do it, and it lived in my living room.
Yes, it did.
For 4 years. And I just kept moving it around, and I'd staple piece it on the wall and keep moving it around. And so
behind it.
Oh my gosh. Because I'm flying into Vegas, but if I'm not coming internationally, I won't see it.
And there's a big,
it's got to be internet.
Yeah, that's okay. The only thing.
Okay. I see another one behind. Oh my gosh, this is beautiful, Terry.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to check out your website. So
it's 50 foot high, and I have like 8 images that come off the wall.
It's stunning.
So it's 3D.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
So.
And is it TERRI? I want to make sure. I'm sorry.
TERRY.
TERRY. Because you want people to find this. So we'll make sure we spell that for them.
RITTERART.com.
Okay. Okay. I want to check that. I'm hoping people will come look at that, because there's so much sweet nostalgia now, like just because we've seen this go away, and there's people that are preserving it all different ways, which I'm so grateful for, because our stories are going to get misconstrued and all that. But I think because of the art and the stories and the photos that are resurfacing, we can make honor what the showgirl was instead of let it be just, trashed of what it really was, the beauty that of the showgirl, but also that we got to do this in a time that's pretty short in dance history and showbiz history, that we happen to be alive at the time they wanted tall, leggy girls. Like, thank God I was born at this time to get to do this. Because my younger dancers, you can tell them cruise ships, but there's just not the same opportunity and the same grandeur and glamour. And like you're talking about celebrities just hanging out, they would come backstage and come to the show. We're like, oh yeah, that was just Tom Jones. Whatever. That's just Tuesday. That's just a normal day.
Ingeborg would always be backstage. Ingeborg and,
Sammy Davis.
Everyone's
got a Sammy Davis story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Cary Grant would come backstage and at Casino de Paris show that we did for Frederick Abcar, and he would bring the photographer with him, and he would take pictures backstage with everybody, because he knew everybody wanted pictures, so that he would bring the photographer with him.
Oh my gosh.
So
those pictures are surfacing. People are bringing out their scrapbooks, and you're seeing these pictures that are incredible. That all these, these musicians, singers are long gone, but we have the photos. So I want to move to Lori Thompson. You've been so patiently waiting. We got three on one screen.
I've enjoyed the story. Some of them I've been
Tell your story.
It's been so wonderful to listen to the other ladies and their stories. Ours overlap, of course. And I was trying to think about you know, I had just a little bit different perspective on the shows than other people, because I am a nerd. I am a first-class nerd.
Yay!
I'm
She's a
lawyer.
A lawyer.
I've been practicing law for 27
She's
years.
She's my lawyer.
And I was a performer for 21 years. And that wasn't my original intention. I started off as a kid. I had a ballet teacher, two ballet teachers. One was from ABT, the other one was from the Royal Academy in London. And they were very strict classical ballet. You know, the splits would probably give one of them a heart attack. And one time I messed something up and the teacher from ABT, he said to me, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" Thinking I was going to say, "I want to be a ballet dancer," and I just messed up, right? And instead I said, "I want to dance on the Carol Burnett show."
That was mine, Carol Burnett. And then when that went away, yeah. and then
she about had a heart attack.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Someone gets a gymnast. So being a gymnast, I think, was really helpful too. Especially what I ended up doing is adagio, being thrown in the air and tossed around and upside down and backwards. Spinning so fast, my fingernails would feel like they were going to stretch out.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So my partners are like amazing. But I wanted to be a lawyer. And when I went to college, you know, I performed as a kid. I performed in musicals, danced with a ballet company. When I went to college, I realized I couldn't get into the really good classes in their fine arts program if I was in a fine arts major or ballet major. So I didn't declare my major as law, and instead got to be in that department. And they're training professional dancers there in college, which is kind of unusual. Usually they're training teachers in college, but I had a chance to dance with Ballet West in Salt Lake City while I was in college and do musicals at, it was Pioneer Memorial Theater at the time. Now it's just Pioneer Theater, equity musicals. And they had a professional modern dance company. In the olden days, they called it modern dance instead of contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
When I graduated from college, I was very young. I just turned 19, and I was getting ready to take the LSAT to start law school. And I was dancing with Ballet West, and they added a matinee, and so I had to cancel my LSAT. That was the first thing that happened. The next thing that happened was I got invited to the International Ballet Competition in Mississippi, and a chance to dance with the Jackson Ballet there as well. So I went to Bruce Marks, who was the artistic director of Ballet West, and told him that I had been offered a soloist position with the Jackson Ballet. And instead of saying to me, "Oh no, Lori, stay here, dance with us, and you can go to law school at night," he said to me, "I think you're going to love Mississippi." And I went, oh my goodness, I'm going off to Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
I went to Mississippi, and the International Ballet Competition is amazing. There are people from all over the world, and the most incredible choreographers and teachers. I get a chance to work with them. All of the major teachers from New York. And that was really very exciting. And then I danced with the ballet company, and we brought up Mikhail Baryshnikov and Peter Martins to dance with the company. So yeah, it was pretty amazing. And I also learned how to raise money for a nonprofit. And I learned the whole structure. I wanted to learn how do you pay for this? You know, how do you build it? I started dancing with Jamie Gallagher, who was also had been hired to come out to work with the company. And he had a book that a friend of his had sent him. And she was Linda Green. Can't remember their name before.
And was she one that was at Jubilee for years and years?
In Jubilee, yeah. Well, they were actually Hollywood at the time.
Oh, that's right.
And they sent us a book with these lifts, and Jamie and I started practicing these lifts. You know, when we weren't doing our other choreography for the company. And we put a tape together and sent it out to Fluff LeCoe because they were looking for adagio teams that weren't in Nevada. And she liked our tape, and they held a spot for us. And we came out in 1980 to audition for as one of the adagio teams for Jubilee. So we get there, we watched Jubilee, and then the whole cast went to sit out in the audience, and we did a 7-minute bolero number.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it was very fun. And afterwards, Joe McDonough and Michael Pratt, I think, were the line captains at the time, and they were just so unbelievably sweet to us, and said how wonderful we were. And Fluff Laco came out and said, "Oh my gosh, you're lovely, but dear, you are too short." She said, "I thought you were much taller." And about that time, I realized I was walking into Tricia Lee's navel.
Oh my God.
Looking up at her, going, "Oh my gosh, I am too short." So Jamie ended up staying to dance in the line and Jubilee and the new show. So they sent him to go get measured for the new costumes. And she sent me across the street. She said, "I know Pat McKegney over at Casino de Paris, and they would love to have you, I'm sure." So I went over there and started to get ready to dance. And she said, "Oh no, dear, I've heard you're a lovely dancer. Could you just drop your top and walk across the floor?" I was like, "Oh my gosh."
Wow.
My ballet teacher was right. And of course I was a little, "Oh my gosh, this is the second show that I watched there, and they're going to rehearse afterwards." And I was not ready for that. So I came back across the street to Fluff, and she got me a cup of tea and said, "Dear, just because you dance topless does not mean you're a bad person, but you're just not quite ready for that." So she called Nancy Housels in the middle of the night and said, "I have a ballerina here that I think would be very happy with you." So I met her the next day, and ended up the company, Nevada Ballet, had just become professional about 2 years before I got there in 1980, maybe 3 years, because I think 77 was the first year they were professional. Now I say professional, but actually all of the dancers on the strip were dancing it was called Nevada Dance Theater originally, and they were dancing, but with the company, and very good dancers and very professional dancers, just not paid, right? Mm. And they switched it over to dancers that could be full-time and do performances at night. And that's when it switched over to a traditional professional company. And they had to go raise money. So that was really pretty fascinating to then find out that Nancy Housels actually had the Adagio Act in the Folies Bergères years before, when it was a little more vaudeville type. And her husband that she ended up marrying was the president of the Tropicana. And it was his father that brought over the Folies Bergères. It was Lou Walters that originally brought it to the Latin Quarter. He saw it there, and he brought it from there to the Tropicana. So that was the first time the Folies Bergères came to Las Vegas. And once Nancy got married, back then you couldn't continue performing because you just wouldn't do that. So she had the money. She started working with Vasily Sulich, who was also in the Folies Bergères, and he left the Follies, and he was the first artistic director. And they literally started the company with mostly Nancy's money. She had some friends that they then put a board together, and the company was fairly strong when I was there. Now I'm on the board for the ballet. So now they're much stronger. They've got almost a $7 million budget. So I've been working with them for about 20 years now on the board, I guess. So quite a long time, but I was always really fascinated about how these things work. Jamie and I put together an act, and we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And I got a call. Well, first of all, after the fire, because Jubilee never opened, they were just about ready to open, and there was a fire at the MGM, and all of the costumes were destroyed from the water to put out the fire. It was really terrible. Thank God the cast had been let go. They finished rehearsals early and they let the cast go, so they weren't there when the fire happened. So that was good. And they were out for more than a year before they started back up again. So a lot of those dancers went to the Folies Bergères, and then some of them went to the Lido, of course. Jamie ended up, I think he went to the Folies Bergères first, and then to the ballet company. Yeah. Can't remember which order that was. But we met a guy, it was one of Jamie's best friends. His name was Joe Trelizzi. He was a dancer in the Folies Bergères. And he used to joke around with me all the time. One time I got a phone call and he said, "Hello, Lori." I said, "Yes." He said, "This is Balanchine, George Balanchine.
Whoa.
I was like, I was at the School of American Ballet, and George Balanchine would come in and watch our classes, but there was no way George Balanchine was calling me. I'm like, who is this? And it was, right? So a little bit later, I get a phone call, and I say, hello, this is it, Lori. And he says, Lori, this is Jerry Jackson. And I went, uh-huh. He goes, well, do you know who I am? And I said, well, should I? Because I'm thinking it's Joe. Right. And it really is Jerry Jackson.
Oh my gosh.
He asked me if I would do. He said, I've heard from Larry Lee that you're a lovely dancer. And I you know, he asked me to do Fire and Ice at the Hacienda. So that was the first time that I worked with him. And then went out and worked on a cruise ship and came back, and they had a dancer that wasn't coming to the New Follies Bergère or something. And so Larry Lee put me in the line there. And then Jamie and I ended up getting a adagio spot in a show called One of a Kind at the Desert Inn.
Wow.
And went to do a show called Star Search.
Oh, yes. Heard of it.
And we were on it several times. And then we found out that Larry Lee, the producer of the Follies Bergère, is going to be one of our judges. So we went and asked him if we could switch our numbers, because we were going to do this cutesy sort of cheerleader nerd act that we had. And we switched it to a classical number because there was a classical adagio in the Follies Bergère. So we did that number anyway. So we ended up coming back into the Follies, but as the understudy adagio team. And then I don't remember how much longer it was before that that we started doing the adagio, and then did that for 13 years. But what I want to say that was very different about being able to do that, you know, I counted up, and I'm sure that Terry and Sherry and Terry Ritter all can add up their shows. And I did over 10,000 performances of different shows, you know, different places.
Yeah,
and most of those were in the Follies Bergère, doing six shows, you know, 6 days a week, two shows a night, so 12 shows. And then before, they were doing seven shows a week. So that's where most of those shows came, those 10,000 came from, which gave me a lot of time to work on other things. So first thing I wanted to do was know how the Follies Bergère worked. And so I found out, spent time with the producer, and they paid $1 million to lease the name Follies Bergère. And then later it was a little bit less expensive because they had a guarantee to use the name for at least 3 more years, because the Follies Bergère had closed in France. So they wanted the name to still have value. And then I learned when Larry was going to let somebody use the showroom and close the show down, how much he would charge. You know, it would depend on what the average ticket sale was for that night and how he would calculate it. And so I was always really fascinated by that. So while I was doing the Follies Bergère, we put together a company called Encore Productions to do a lot of the originally the work in the convention center. And it's expanded. It's a big company now. It has the in-house AV account for most of the major casino resorts. So I did that while I was in the Follies Bergère. I worked on, as Tom said, a television show while I was in the Follies Bergère, called Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. I also kind of negotiated my deal there too. I went to this interview when I did the Star Search show. We would fly in during the day and tape, and then fly back and do our show, and fly back the next day and tape, and then fly back and do our shows. So, you know, it wasn't that hard to go back and forth right then. But I wanted to do more television because I wanted to learn more about television. And I saw that they had an interview for a television show they were taping at the Riviera Hotel. So I went over there and I saw a video of Japanese women wrestling. These Japanese women were like amazing. They would like do a clothesline and they would do like a back layout. And I thought, okay, I'm really sorry, I am not a wrestler. And they said, wait, what do you do? I said, well, I sing, I dance. I used to do comedy when I was in college, musical theater. And I said, but I don't wrestle. So I said, wait a minute. Wrestling is the hook. Whatever you can do, we'll shoot, because we're writing the show as we go. I thought, well, that might work for me. So I came back and said, I need three things. I said, I need I need spinoffs because I'm not really a wrestler. So I need spinoffs for TV series and possibly film. I need to shadow the producer, the director, the writer, the distributor. I want to learn the entire television industry on this. And number three, I have an adagio act at the Folies Bergère, and I do two shows a night, 6 days a week, and you're going to have to work around. I thought, take out my portfolio. I thought, I'm good. I'm done here. And he goes, okay, we can do that.
Oh, and wow. They
kept their word. They kept their word. And then when we started working on, you know, what kind of character I was going to be, I came up with Susie Spirit because my parents call me Susie, and I'd been doing cheerleading demonstrations with one of the guys in the Folies Bergère, what had bought a gym and was putting together a gym to teach dance and cheerleading and gymnastics. So we put together the FU cheerleaders. The thought, we didn't say that out loud when we went to the children's school. But it was all made up of Folies Bergère people that weren't afraid of going upside down and being thrown in the air. And we put together like a cheerleading squad and went around and did the demonstrations in the different schools to help bring students to his gym, for Beau Ramus's gym. So I had that kind of just been doing that. So that's how I came up with my cheerleader character. And they said, you can't be a cheerleader by yourself. There's no such thing as one cheerleader. I went and talked to Anne Labrie, who is an acrobat in the Folies Bergère, and I said, what would you think about doing this? And she went, okay. So we were the cheerleader. She was Debbie Debutante, and I was Susie Spirit.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I need to move us into, this is our schedule so tricky. I have to get to a rehearsal with a like 40 something high school kids, which they're non-dancers.
Oh my gosh.
So super fun. Yeah. But I want to make sure we get to Folies, because all of your stories, we probably should have had an hour for each one, but this is kind of fun to see the overlap. And then we're really like Folies Bergère, and then the name of the show is Folies with a different L. I wanted to know like what that was like when you found out, if you were asked, if you saw something in audition, what was the process? And then I also want to talk about what the rehearsal process, because I got to see a video, because I know I'm following you on Facebook, and you guys aren't just step touching, you're dancing. And so I would love to hear like finding out how you decided to say yes or no to this, and then what it's been like to, you know, get back in a studio. And if you haven't left the studio, it might be different, or just to know like, oh, we're not just doing this for class, we're actually going to put this on stage pretty soon.
Well, I knew Tom and David from the work that they'd been doing with the ballet, because they've been on the, like I said, the board for Nevada Ballet. So that's where I met Tom. He was their development director for a while. And they asked if they could meet me to talk about a new project that they were doing. And I do a lot of, I'm an entertainment lawyer, so I do a lot of contracts and a lot of deals for shows on the Strip. So I went over to talk to them about the project, and they showed me the whole project. And I said to him afterwards, you know what, I would love to take this on a pro bono basis. And he looked at me and he went, we want you to be one of the legendary showgirls in it.
Oh.
And I thought, but I know I can do the legal work. I'm not so sure I can actually dance in the show, but okay. He goes, no, that's okay. He said, we have, you know, it's intended to be that way. You guys are not, you know, haven't danced in many, many years. So it's intended to be that way. So it wasn't until later that I found out he was going to bring in these wonderful dancers, Terry and Sherry, that have been dancing, you know, since we ended up leaving the Folies Bergère. So it has just been exciting. The rehearsals have been fun. It's been fun to do music again and sing and learn from great people and be around great people. The other day, we got to watch Bubba Knight do a tap dance. Yeah, and then we get to join in with Bubba on the end part of it. So that was kind of exciting. Yeah. So that's my story. I'm sure these guys have.
Yeah. Let's hear what that was like for you, how you found out and how it's been to. Yeah.
Well, I was out with Luann one afternoon, and she didn't even mention it to me. And we just had a nice afternoon having lunch along with Terry Ritter. And we were just sitting around talking about what we've been doing. And, I still take, and Terry and I both take dance classes once a week. So we kind of like that. Okay, we're kind of in shape. But she hadn't mentioned anything about doing the Follies. And then I got a phone call the next day, and she called and talked to me about, there was a show by the name of Follies coming up. And, you know, I went, oh, I haven't thought about that. You know, this sounds really, really something exciting that's coming to town that we haven't seen for so long. And it's just like, well, you know, I'm kind of in shape, but not that good shape. You know, but, you know, I think it's something I would really, really like to do. It's something like in the end of my life, I have to say that, but it's something fabulous to do, you know, that you've done all your life, but maybe one more time on stage would be so exciting, just to get dressed and put on the eyelashes and the heels, of course, you know, and the gowns and just look beautiful and gorgeous one more time for this glamour show that's going to be. And the show just seems to be so fantastic that's coming out. Everybody is so nice and has treated us like royalty. Mm-hmm. And it's just been going to rehearsal. It's just like, we can't wait to get to rehearsals to start. You know, that's how exciting it's been.
Wow.
And everybody's been so much fun. Choreographer, everybody, Tom, Tim, David, all of them, Sean, everybody, and Sarah, the choreography, she's just like, she knows, she's just beautiful, and she's just been treating us so well, and just, we all feel, when we leave there, we just feel so good, you know, we're doing something good for the community, and, you know, and for all of us entertainers, just one more time. You know?
One more time. I love that.
Let's just do it one more time.
Yeah. I think a lot of us didn't know our last show was our last show. Maybe we did, but there's something of getting to go, I get to do one more time.
Absolutely.
Sherry, what was that like for you? Did you guys find out at the same time?
No, I'm a friend of Luann's, and Terry and I were both at an art thing that she was doing. And I had an art piece there, and she was telling us about this, and said, I don't know. I'm a grandmother now. You know, I had Little League and things like I wanted to do, but I said, well, I really would like to see Clint Holmes and Kelly Clint, and I know all these people too, and you know, the friendships and things that you make it at something this big and spectacular. Yes. Michelle Johnson, I mean, I just, and my friends, mm-hmm. my with me now, I so I'll get to see them all the time. And I'm still dancing. I take dance class all the time. That's my biggest love besides my grandchildren and art. So it was just really fun, and I'm really, my husband kind of talked me into it. I go, no, I'm good. but he said, yes, you should do it. It'd be good for you. And it's made me more inspired with the art and seeing everybody, and the talent is just amazing in the show. Just so it's going to be great. Mm. It is great.
I'm so excited. I'm going to see it. Sherry, how about for you? How was that for you to decide yes or no?
Well, I think Terry and Terry knew first, and then she called me and she told me what it is. And I said, well, do they have room for somebody else? It's maybe something I wanted to do. And so Terry called Luann, and Luann says, let me see your bio and see everything. See if I'm appropriate for it, I guess. And then she called me right away and said, yes, we'd love to have you. So it was good. And I get to wear an evening gown, which I've never worn in my entire life. So that was I'm going to do on stage. Yeah, I'm going to do on stage. Do this. And the dancing has been so good. The choreographer is so good. She works with us, and she's made it so nice for all of us.
Yeah,
she really
she
worked
yell
with
us.
Yeah, she has to.
Like the old days.
Nobody's yelling. And they really work with us. So it's been a delight. It really has. You know?
How long are your rehearsals each day?
Oh, we've been rehearsing like twice a week, maybe for like 2.5 hours. So maybe 5 hours, 5 to 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And then we have it all on video, which is really nice. So then we can take it home and practice.
Yeah.
So we didn't have that back then. So that's been really convenient for all of us. It's having the music and the choreography at home, and you can practice.
Mm.
Yeah, it's always been.
I love it. I wish we had video back then. Like I said, we didn't even get to put the costume on until the day of the show. Would have been nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So I need to wrap this up, but I have a question for each of you. What has this done for your dancer heart to get to do this?
Mm. is her heart?
Mm. Like, there's a part of us, like, we're grandmas, we're this or that. There's a part of us that still is that. But even when I see a show, it brings something up in me that makes me still feel really young. It touches on something that is still there. I just forgot it was there.
Yeah, but you can still, I mean, you go to the rehearsal and all of a sudden you see that you can still do this. I don't care how old you are. We are dancing. We're dancing with young ones. We're dancing with old ones. And you know what? We still have it.
We still have it.
My dad said that.
Yeah, too. That's it.
He says, I still got it.
Yeah.
That's what my dad said
when he was dancing. And just wait till the curtain goes up. You're going to see a lot more pizzazz out there with these ladies.
And glitz and glamour.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I think the one thing that made this so important for us to do is it's really hard, as you probably know, Sherry, to step back on stage and do something that requires a skill that you had back then, because you know you just don't and so that you don't want to tarnish the career that you had as a dancer by doing that in some places for some things,
right?
And this was a whole different thing, because this is all about us when we were young, mm-hmm. and us now. And when I see my ghost, my heart just soars. She's a sweet, young, beautiful dancer. And she is a ghost of what we were before. Yeah. And it makes your heart just sing when you see that, because there are memories. So we remember it spectacular. Yeah. And we still are who we are. And we still can do a lot of the things. And, you know, I look around at these ladies and they all have this performance quality that's amazing that slips out during rehearsals sometimes. And you just go, wow. So this, I think, is the absolute perfect thing for us to be able to step back on the stage and do and be very proud of and feel connected to. Oh, and it's about the theater closing and our theaters closing.
Yeah. And that's the fact that the Trop is closing, and that feels like you guys definitely are the ones to represent this, because everything else, like Stardust is gone, Jubilee's gone. But when I heard the Trop, I'm like, that can't be. The Tropicana can't close. That doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I think the timing of this is amazing, and to go out with class and beauty. I'm so excited to see the show. So can we say the dates that it opens and runs to for people listening to this?
Yes. It opens on April 11th. It's at the Aliante Casino. And it runs through the 15th. So it's Thursday night, Friday night, two shows on Saturday, two shows on Sunday. And you can get your tickets at showgirlscomehome.com. Showgirlscomehome.
I've got mine. I'm bringing some friends. I have some friends that worked in Jubilee that are coming with me. I'm doing a book signing for the Bluebells Forever book. This whole weekend I'm there is about the revival of the showgirl. And you guys are the last thing I'm going to do that week. So it feels perfect to honor the whole story, because if you don't pay attention to what came before us, it's just really sad to go. The memories of, you know, I use this example, it's terrible, but the showgirls on the strip taking pictures of people, and people go, oh, those are showgirls. We're like, no, it's not.
No, they're not.
No. And so to show like the dignity, the class, and then the stories, that's what I love of hearing Tom talk about the story with the ghost, and like, you get to go back in your body what that felt like to be on stage. So I have to run. I'm so sorry, because I really want like 7 more hours with this, but you know when it comes through. And any photos we can send, and we want people to, you know, get their tickets now, because if they think they can wait, they might not get a chance to see it. So get your tickets, people. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing you on stage, because now that I've heard your story, I'm going to even be like more connected to each of your characters. And I want to see you afterwards. I don't know if you do hugs or not, but I will ask. I was like, so excited to see you guys in person after this.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. And keep our showgirl legacy alive. Bless you, ladies.
Okay, bye.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.